Greetings from the Society for Community Research and Action Biennial Conference. This is Jill McLay, Policy Liaison for the Global Alliance for Behavioral Health and Social Justice. I'm here with our Max Heyman Award winner, Jeannie Anand, who's the Senior Research Director at the International Rescue Committee. Jeannie focused her address on the imperative to learn in humanitarian response to the refugee crisis. In her talk, Jeannie, you said we are having to fight for things we haven't had to since World War II. You also mentioned having to defend the fundamentals, which was something that you hadn't had experienced or hadn't had to do before. I was wondering if you could expound upon that and say a little bit more about what you mean.
Sure. First of all, thanks so much. It was really an honor to receive this award. In terms of the fundamentals, what I was referring to is this questioning of whether we should resettle refugees in countries. I think some of the myths or the fiction out there that refugees are tied to terrorism and really not understanding the long process and vetting, incredibly long and rigorous process that refugees go through to then be able to receive refugee status, and actually people equating refugees with terrorism rather than equating them with people who are fleeing enormous violence. But I was also referring to things like the Trump administration travel ban that included a pause of refugees coming over to the United States. And while it was just a pause, what it meant is really leaving refugees who had been through this process, who had already been approved, in this no man's land, and not allowing them to come after being cleared. And so this real sort of questioning of whether we should be accepting refugees, resettling refugees, and what our role in the U.S. and some other countries is. I think there's also been some questioning in the current budget process, the proposed budget, about with proposed cuts, enormous cuts to humanitarian aid, really unprecedented cuts, and so really in questioning this kind of fundamental assumption that high-income countries, rich countries, should have a moral imperative to help those in crisis and use the wealth that we have and the luck of being born in one place to support others. And so fortunately, there are many people who are fighting this, and I think the hope is, you know, whether the protests at airports against the travel ban in many cities, but also the legal fighting that has happened to currently stop the travel ban from going through. And also many people on both sides of the political divide in government actually working to make sure that humanitarian aid isn't cut. So the negative is that there's this attack on humanitarian aid and basic fundamentals of wanting to accept refugees, but there are also many, many people who are fighting to make sure that we don't lose those fundamentals.
Thank you. And you also then mentioned that there are things that we as the humanitarian community should be doing, things that we should have to defend and things that we should have to prove. Can you tell us a little bit about what you mean?
Sure. So there is thinking about really having to, the good, hard questions of what impact we're having, of whether what we're doing is the most effective thing we can be doing, and whether what we're doing is the best that can be done for each dollar spent. And I think we have an imperative to make sure that every dollar that we have that is given by governments or by individuals or by foundations is spent in the way that will have the most impact. And I think those are hard but good questions that we should have to prove. And, you know, we've come a long way in the humanitarian field in being able to answer those. We have been now IRC, the International Rescue Committee, but many other NGOs are working to measure what impact the work we do has on people's lives. But we also still have a long way to go to make sure that we continue to measure measure well, and that we continuously improve the work that we're doing. And that's not an end state. That's kind of a continual process, I think.
So when we talk about the need to show impact, we're talking here about evaluation, and we're talking about really understanding what the process that was undertaken and what kind of outcomes resulted. So what is it that you think that we need to do to be able to build that evaluation base?
Great. So I think first is being clear about the outcomes, so really making sure that we're clear about what we're trying to change. And then I think we need long-term strategic partnerships, research practice partnerships, where both researchers and practitioners are invested in a research agenda that is trying to answer the most important questions about impact, but also about what implementation matters, what costs are inputted, and what cost what things are most cost effective, as well as systems, and thinking not just about a pilot intervention, but about what systems are needed to surround an intervention, to bring it to scale, to make it work. So really long-term research practice partnerships that are looking at not just one-off studies, but a long-term agenda that's answering a series of questions that are going to help build a sustainable system of interventions versus just one-off pilots. We have a great partnership with IRC has a great partnership with NYU Global Ties for Children that I think exemplifies that kind of partnership that started off as a one research project partnership, but has really grown into a longer term partnership where we have studies in multiple countries, really trying to understand what is the most effective and cost-effective intervention or set of interventions that can build children's social emotional learning and literacy and numeracy in conflict-affected settings. I think we also need to have this commitment to learn by organizations. So humanitarians have an imperative to act. And I think we also need an equal imperative to learn, so that the actions we take are better every time, and that we're learning from the past. And this everyone wants this. All humanitarian workers that I've ever worked with want to continuously improve, but sometimes acting now can be in tension with learning, and so how we can build space and incentives in to allow people to reflect and learn, make sure that the research that does exist is synthesized in ways that make sense to practitioners, that are actionable as much as possible, that are given in a timely manner. And again, this is something that we've tried to work at IRC on our interactive outcomes and evidence framework, to have something that's really user-friendly, and we're continually trying to figure out how best to do that. And then really make sure that that's embedded into regular work and not something people have to then, after their 10-hour day, go and do on their off hours. And then lastly, I think none of this will be successful without a supportive system, including supportive leadership and supportive funding. So funding that's long-term, that's flexible, leadership that allows for failure and learning from that failure.
Wonderful. And you gave an example of kind of how, what that might look like when you have those pieces in place. It was a report entitled What Works to Prevent Violence Against Women and Girls. Can you describe that report a little bit and tell us how it kind of fits in with what you're saying needs to be in our evaluation base?
Sure, great. And it's, there are some reports, but it's actually a consortium funded by the UK government, DFID, and it's a multi-component program to build the thin evidence base around violence prevention for women and girls. So they funded multiple organizations, IRC being one of them, to develop a research agenda over 5 years. So first of all, it was long-term funding, 5 years. It funded multiple organizations, not just one, and on this research agenda, and not only funded the research projects and these research partner research practice partnerships across multiple countries in a coordinated way, but also funded communication strategies, engagement with stakeholders, and so really making sure that the research was set for the best take-up that it could with the people that were most relevant. So the research in refugee camps in Kenya that we're working on, really working together with both the government of Kenya but also committees within the refugee camps. The project in research project in South Sudan, really working with the many stakeholders, government but also NGOs who are working in South Sudan, so that the questions that they had were embedded in the research projects, and then has time after the research projects within this funding to continue to analyze the questions that come up, but also the communication and dissemination and engagement with the research, and not just ending right after the research project finishes and the one publication or a couple of publications mm-hmm. comes out. So I think it's just a great example of the kind of funding that's needed to build a body of evidence rather than just to do one research project.
That's really helpful. And also helpful was you had a slide in your presentation that showed us an example of the database that you guys are developing and have at IRC about some of the efforts that you've undertaken. I'm sure our listeners would like to be able to access that database. Where can they go to find that information?
Great. Thanks for asking that question. It's at oef.rescue.org. Oef.rescue.org, and you should be able to find it and then find which outcomes are most relevant for your work. Click on those outcomes and then look to both the theories of change that from evidence and experience build towards those outcomes, and the systematic reviews behind those outcomes showing what interventions have some evidence or some promising evidence or findings that actually show that those interventions don't work towards those outcomes.
Thank you. And if you guys would like to learn more about Jeannie Anand's work, there's information on our website at bhjustice.org. That's bhjustice.org, where you can also find a link to Jeannie's website. Jeannie, thank you again for taking time to talk with us, and congratulations on your Max Haymon Award.
Thank you so much.